in the center of the pan have been covered with a light coating of flour. Shake out excess flour. Alternatively, you can coat the inside of the bundt pan with Pam baking spray, which is a non-stick cooking spray with flour already in it. Crack the eggs into the bowl of an electric mixer. Mix them up on low speed until they're a uniform color. Pour in the half cup of vegetable oil and mix it in with the eggs on low speed. Add the half cup of cold coffee and mix it in on low speed. Scoop out the container of sour cream and add the sour cream to your bowl. Mix that in on low speed. When everything is well combined, open the box of dry cake mix and sprinkle it on top of the liquid ingredients in the bowl of the mixer. Mix that in on low speed. Add the package of instant chocolate pudding and mix that in, again, on low speed. Finally, sprinkle in the 12-ounce bag of mini chocolate chips and mix those in on low speed. Shut off the mixer, scrape down the sides of the bowl, and give your batter a final stir by hand. Use a rubber spatula to transfer the cake batter to the prepared bundt pan. Smooth the top of your cake with the spatula and put it into the oven. Bake your ultimate fudgy chocolate cake at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 55 minutes. Before you take your cake out of the oven, test it for doneness by inserting a cake tester, thin wooden skewer, or long toothpick midway between the sides of the circular ring. You can't insert it in the center of the cake because that's where the crater is. If the tester comes out clean, your cake is done. If there is still unbaked batter clinging to the tester, shut the oven door and bake your cake in 5-minute increments until it's done. Once your cake is done, take it out of the oven and set it on a cold stove burner or a wire rack. Let your cake cool for 20 minutes, and then pull the sides away from the pan with impeccably clean fingers. Don't forget to do the same for the crater in the middle. Tip the bundt pan upside down on a platter, and drop it gently on a towel on the kitchen counter. Do this until the cake falls out of the pan and rests on the platter. Cover your ultimate fudgy chocolate bundt cake loosely with foil, and refrigerate it for at least 1 hour. Overnight is even better. Frost your cake with Cool Whip fudge frosting. Recipe and instructions follow. Yield at least 10 pieces of decadent chocolate cake. Serve with tall glasses of ice-cold milk or cups of strong coffee. Cool Whip fudge frosting. This recipe is made in the microwave. 8-ounce by weight tub of frozen Cool Whip. Do not thaw. 6-ounce by weight bag of chocolate chips. I used Nestle semi-sweet chips. Hannah's first note, make sure you use the original Cool Whip, not the sugar-free or the real whipped cream. Place the Cool Whip in a microwave-safe bowl. Add the chocolate chips to the bowl. Microwave the bowl on high for 1 minute, and then let it sit in the microwave for an additional minute. Take the bowl out of the microwave, then stir to see if the chocolate chips are melted. If they're not, heat them in 30-second intervals with 30-second standing times in the microwave until you succeed in melting the chocolate chips. Let the bowl sit on the countertop or on a cold burner for 15 minutes to thicken the icing. When the time is up, give the bowl a stir and remove your cake from the refrigerator. Frost your ultimate fudgy chocolate bundt cake with the frosting, and don't forget the crater in the middle. You don't need to frost all the way down. That's almost impossible. Just frost an inch or so down the crater. Return your cake to the refrigerator for at least 30 minutes before cutting it and serving it to your guests. Hannah's second note. You can also use this icing on cookies. Simply frost and let your cookies sit on wax paper on the kitchen counter until the frosting has set and is dry to the touch. Yield, this frosting will frost a batch of cookies, a 9-inch by 13-inch cake, a bundt cake, or a round 2-tier layer cake. Hannah's third note, I always keep a tub of original Cool Whip and a bag of chocolate chips on hand to make this easy and delicious chocolate frosting. Chapter 12. Grandma Knutson sat in her favorite chair as Hannah poured tea. The tea tray contained the teapot in a cozy, lemon, sugar, cream, and two bone china cups with saucers. The only thing missing on the tea tray was the pair of white gloves that Grandma said were passé. "Thank you, Hannah," Grandma said as she accepted the saucer and cup of tea from Hannah. "You do this beautifully, dear." "Thank you. It's only because you taught me," Hannah returned the compliment. Grandma Knutson looked pleased. She took a sip of her tea, smiled at Hannah, and asked, "Aren't you glad you're married, Hannah?" "Oh, yes," Hannah said quickly, but she was a bit taken aback. Grandma wasn't usually this personal. "Ross is a wonderful husband." "I'm glad to hear it, dear. To tell you the truth, I think you two make a perfect pair." Suddenly, almost by magic, the scene changed to the Red Owl grocery. Hannah was standing by the meat counter trying to decide what she should buy for dinner. "The salmon is good today," Florence told her, leaning forward in her snow-white butcher's apron. "It just came in from Alaska." Hannah smiled. She loved salmon. "That gives me a wonderful idea, Florence. Ross loves salmon. So I'll take 3 pieces, and I'll make salmon Wellington for Ross." Florence nodded and began to wrap the salmon in butcher paper. "Then things are going well, Hannah?" "Oh, yes," Hannah replied. "Everything's just wonderful, Florence." "That's good," Florence said as she handed the package to Hannah. "I think you two make the perfect pair." The scene shifted again, and Hannah was the perfect pair, a lovely golden color with a slight rosy tint that proved that she was ripe for the picking. She was hanging from a branch on a lovely little pear tree in a beautiful garden. It must have been night because there were colorful Japanese lanterns hung from the other trees, and little twinkling lights decorated the trunks and branches. There was a stamped concrete square in the very center of the carefully manicured garden, and it appeared to be a dance floor for balls and parties. An orchestra played on the far side of the square, and Hannah could see beautifully dressed couples dancing in the night. One couple caught Hannah's eye. The man was Ross, and he was dancing with a lovely woman who looked exactly like Grace Kelly in The Swan. Her hair was golden, her white ball gown fit her perfect figure like a glove, and the image they presented was utterly breathtaking. Even though the stellar couple was far away, Hannah found that she could hear their conversation. It was as if they were speaking directly into her ear. "I love you with all my heart," Ross said. "I would move heaven and earth to make you happy. Your wish is my command." His lovely partner smiled at him and held him close. "There's only one thing I really want." "Anything," Ross promised. "What is it, darling?" "The perfect pair. I'd like to have the perfect pair." "If I knew where to find it, I'd get it for you," Ross said, smiling down at her. "I see it. It's there on that little pear tree." The woman pointed to Hannah's branch. "Right there. Do you see it?"
"I do. I'll pluck it for you, my dearest. Just wait, and you'll have it as a gift from me."
Hannah felt cold, as if something dreadful were about to happen, and then she began to tremble, but it was not from fear. Ross was standing directly below her branch, reaching up toward her. Since she was on the highest branch, he couldn't quite reach her, but he was shaking the branch, trying to make her fall right into his hand.
"No!"
she screamed, terrified that she was about to lose the safe haven of her branch.
"No, Ross! Please don't hurt me!"
But he didn't seem to hear her because he shook even harder. Her branch, her safe and secure home, began to sway back and forth, threatening to break. But her branch and her stem were strong. She had a fighting chance. If only he would stop trying to shake her down, she would be safe. And then it happened.
the heart of her, her strong and resilient stem, could not withstand such abuse. With a snap it gave way, and she was hurtling toward the ground, toward Ross and his waiting hand. "Here you are, darling," Ross called out, carrying her to the beautiful woman who was waiting at the edge of the dance floor. "Let's eat this perfect pear together and pledge our love. You first." Hannah screamed as the woman bit into her tender flesh. Her life was over. Ross had betrayed her with another woman. He cared for her no longer. She was completely dead to him.
"Hannah? Hannah, wake up!"
The voice was familiar, and Hannah came out of her hideous dream with a gasp.
"What?"
She tried to speak, but tears were choking her throat.
"That must have been one heck of an awful nightmare," Michelle said, sitting down on the edge of Hannah's bed. "I should have realized that something was wrong when the cats came racing into the kitchen and tried to hide under the table. Cuddles was shaking, and Moishe's ears were flat against his head. Then I heard you screaming, and I ran all the way to the bedroom to see what was wrong."
"Sorry," Hannah gasped as she sat up and began to breathe again. She hadn't been aware that she'd been holding her breath. "You're right," she said. "It was a nightmare, and it was awful."
"Do you want to tell me about it?"
"Not really, but it was about a pear tree." Hannah stopped speaking and realized that she smelled something wonderful. "Do I smell pears baking?"
"You do. I've got 2 upside-down pear coffee cakes in the oven, and another 2 cooling on the racks. Aunt Nancy and Lisa found the recipe in one of Hades' mother's old cookbooks."
"It smells great," Hannah said, chasing away the last vestiges of her nightmare. "No wonder I dreamed about perfect pears."
"Maybe I'd better stop baking with fruit," Michelle said, still holding Hannah's arm. "First you dreamed about strawberries, then peaches, and now pears. I'd hate to think of what might happen if I baked a fruit cake."
"You don't have to bake one," Hannah told her. "If I keep on having nightmares like this, I'll be one."
Michelle stood up. "Tell me about your dream later if you feel like it. My psych professor says that sometimes, if you tell someone about a nightmare, you don't dream the same one again."
Hannah considered that for a moment, wondered if it was true, and decided that she'd have to try it sometime. "Thanks, Michelle. I'll take a shower and be right out. That coffee cake smells so good, my stomach is growling." The coffee cake was every bit as good as it smelled, and Hannah and Norman were full of compliments for Michelle. "I especially like the pears," Hannah said, accepting a second piece. "So do I," Norman held out his plate for his second slice. "It's pretty, too. It's almost like the pineapple and cherry upside-down cake that my mother used to make." Michelle laughed.
"Yes, except that my coffee cake doesn't have pineapples and cherries."
"That might be it," Norman said with a laugh, and Hannah knew he was laughing at himself. "What made you decide to use pears, Michelle?"
"I thought about apple slices, but Hannah didn't have any apples. Then I thought about peaches, but she didn't have any of those either. I looked through her pantry, spotted a couple of cans of pears, and I decided to use them."
"Do you think you could make them with fresh pears, too?" Hannah asked her.
"I think so, if I peel, core, and slice them. That's what I was planning to do with the apples. Let's stop by the Red Owl and see if Florence has any fresh pears. If she doesn't, I'll use canned pears again. I want to make another couple of coffee cakes for the cookie jar to see how your customers like it."
"Good idea. We can serve coffee cake at Sally's convention, too, if we get some small paper plates and plastic forks," Hannah suggested. "The convention opens at 9, and we could feature coffee cake as our breakfast treat." "And muffins," Norman suggested. "You don't need plates and forks with those, and they're good for breakfast, too."
"And Michelle makes great breakfast muffins," Hannah said.
"I've had the peach muffins and the strawberry muffins," Norman remembered. "You could make mini muffins in mini cupcake papers, and people could mix and match them."
"Good idea," Hannah said, turning to Michelle. The next time you come home on vacation, let's try it at the cookie jar.
That would be fun, Michelle agreed.
Are you going to come out to help me pick out my car, Norman?
Yes, right after I take Cuddles home. Doc Bennett's coming in to help me today, so I have the day off. And I'd like to take both of you out to dinner tonight at the Lake Eden Inn to celebrate.
Thanks, Norman, Michelle said, accepting for both of them. I'm really glad you'll be with us at Cyril's. I value your opinion, and I want to make sure I choose the right car.
Hannah could tell that Norman was pleased. We can drink some of Cyril's bad coffee while we wait for Michelle to test drive the cars, she told Norman. That way, I won't be standing in the car lot alone.
You're not going to look at the cars with me?
Michelle sounded surprised. Hannah shook her head. No, you don't need my help, and it's your decision. You'll be the one driving it.
But how can I be sure I get the right car?
It's easy, Hannah said. All you have to do is pretend you're shopping for clothes. When you try something on, you know if it's right for you. A dress might look wonderful on the rack, but if it looks awful on you, you won't buy it. It's the same thing with cars. They can look good sitting there in the lot, but you have to try them on by test driving them. I'm sure you have a good idea of what you want. When you see it, and when you drive it, you'll know, and you'll make the right choice. An hour and a half later, Norman stood next to Hannah as Lonnie and Cyril showed the used cars they'd chosen to Michelle.
If you were the one buying a used car, which one would you choose? He asked Hannah.
Personally, I'd choose the blue one, but it's up to Michelle. Hannah was glad that Norman had arranged with Doc Bennett to take over his morning appointments. It was good to have company on a car-buying expedition like this. Norman looked slightly worried.
She won't go for the convertible, will she?
It's really a nice-looking car, but I don't think so.
Good. I had a used convertible when I was in Seattle, and it was awful in the winter. I was always cold, even when the heater was going full blast.
That's why I'm glad it's winter and Michelle is test-driving the cars now.
You're right. She'll get to test the heaters, too.
A car with a bad heater can be miserable, Hannah replied. And that certainly wasn't an exaggeration. The heater in her cookie truck had never worked properly until Mike and Norman had paid Cyril to fix it for her as a surprise present. One by one, Michelle climbed behind the wheels of the cars that Lonnie and Cyril had selected. Lonnie went along on the test drives, and Hannah was glad to see that Michelle was shaking her head after she'd driven the convertible. She'd saved the blue car for last, and Hannah found she was smiling as Michelle drove out of the lot.
"Do you think that's the one?" Norman asked her.
"I hope so. She saved it for last, and Michelle tends to save the best for last."
"How do you know?"
"I remember when she was little. She loved bacon, and she always ate her pancakes first and saved her bacon for last." I've got my fingers crossed, Norman. The blue one would make a good car for her.
Why?
It's not too large, and that means she wouldn't have any problem parking. And it's not so small that it wouldn't hold everything she usually carries with her. It has a back seat, and that would be good for passengers. And it looks sporty, but it's also a sedan. 5 minutes later, Michelle was back. She parked the car, and she looked very excited as she ran over to join them.
"Is it okay if I choose the blue one, Hannah?"
"Of course," Hannah answered quickly. "You can have any car that you want."
"But what if it's a lot more than the money Cyril could get for Ross's car?"
"Don't worry about that. Cyril and Lonnie picked out the used cars that were an even trade, or very close to it."
Michelle gave them a big, happy smile.
"Then I'll take the blue one. I've always wanted a car like that."
She threw her arms around her sister and gave her a big hug.
"Thank you, Hannah. Lonnie and Cyril both checked it out, and they said it runs perfectly."
"Then go tell them that you made your decision and you want it," Hannah urged her.
"I will. I can hardly wait to drive it to the cookie jar."
When Michelle ran off, Hannah turned to Norman. "I'm going to talk to Cyril."
That's fine with me. I'll leave, too. I really should get down to the clinic.
Hannah was surprised. But I thought Doc Bennett was taking over your appointments.
He is, but I have some paperwork to do. I'm way behind on my billing. I'll see you later, Hannah.
Great. I'll be testing out some new cookies today, and I'll save samples for you.
Once Norman had left, Hannah walked over to Cyril, Michelle, and Lonnie.
Could I see you for a moment, Cyril?
Sure thing.
Cyril moved away from Michelle and Lonnie.
What's up, Hannah?
Two things. Let's go to your office. We can talk on the way.
Hannah waited until they were completely out of earshot, and then she broached the first subject.
Something occurred to me last night, but it was too late to call you. Did the man who bought Ross's car know that PK died in it?
No. There was no reason to tell him.
But I thought you had to file a report when the car had been in an accident.
You do if the damage is over a certain amount. This was less.
I wonder if the man would have bought it if he'd known.
I think he would have, but we weren't required to tell him, so we didn't. I'm really sorry about PK, Hannah. I liked him, and I liked his girlfriend, too.
You knew his girlfriend?
I only met her once, but she left a lasting impression.
Cyril gave a little chuckle. PK bought one of my used cars for her as an engagement present. He said she'd always wanted a Jeep, and we had a nice used Wrangler on the lot.
It didn't have that many miles on it, but it needed to be repainted. PK told me that was fine because he was going to have it repainted in Pinky's favorite color before he gave it to her.
Her name was Pinky?
That's what he called her. But I think it must have been short for something else. PK said that pink was her favorite color, and she'd always wanted a pink Jeep. He was going to sign it over to her right before he proposed and gave her an engagement ring.
That's a really nice engagement present.
Yes, and it's unique. I've never seen a pink Jeep before.
Neither have I, Hannah gave a little laugh. Did you paint her Jeep here?
No, PK took it to one of those places that paint your whole car in a day. He picked it up the next day and brought it back here. We put it up on the hoist so she wouldn't see it right away, and it could be a surprise. They got engaged in bay 2 of my garage.
She didn't know about the pink Jeep?
She didn't know about any of it,
including the ring PK hid in the glove box.
We lowered the hoist, and you should have seen her face. PK handed her the keys, told her that the Jeep was his present for her, and said that there was another present for her in the glove box. They got in, she opened the glove box, and found the engagement ring, and they kissed for what must have been a whole 5 minutes. My mechanics still talk about how much fun we had that day.
I can see why. Hannah was still amused at the idea of a pink Jeep. Did she love her pink Jeep?
She surely did. She was totally in love with the paint job, and she even noticed that they painted the inside of the glove box and all 4 wheel wells. That was a great day, Hannah. We toasted them with champagne for us and sparkling apple juice for them, because PK had told us that they didn't drink. We closed the shop early that day, and all the customers who came in to pick up their cars joined in the party.
I wish I'd been here.
So do I. We really had a good time. We ordered pizza and made sure we got a special chicken and mushroom one for her, because she doesn't eat red meat.
And when a couple of the mechanics' wives came to pick them up, we turned on the radio and danced to the music.
Then Bridget came in with the engagement cakes she'd baked for them.
Cakes? Hannah asked, noticing that Cyril had used the plural to refer to his wife's contribution to the party.
That's right. She made 3 of them, exactly the same. When I asked her why, she told me that she just knew it was going to turn into a big party.
What kind of cake was it?
Chocolate. Everyone who was here had a slice with ice cream on top, because she didn't have time to frost them. She told me that she got the recipe from you.
Did she call it Ultimate Fudgy Chocolate Cake? Hannah asked him.
That sounds right. It was so good, I asked her to make it for all my birthdays from then on.
Tell Bridget I'll give her the recipe for my chocolate frosting. It's fast and easy to make, and it's the perfect frosting for that cake.
Hannah and Cyril arrived at the outer door to the garage, and they walked to his office. Once Hannah had seated herself in the chair in front of his desk, she drew out her checkbook.
I want to write you a check for whatever I owe you on Michelle's car, and if it's more than I have in my checking account, I want to pay off the rest on time.
That's nice of you, Hannah, but you don't owe me anything. As a matter of fact, I owe you $500.
Cyril laughed at her astounded expression.
That's right, Hannah. I got a great price for the car Ross signed over to you. Even adding in the registration and insurance, you still came out $500 to the good.
Really? Are you sure that includes everything?
I'm positive. This isn't the first car I've sold, Hannah.
I know. It's just hard to believe you got that much for Ross's car. You must be a great salesman.
Of course I am. I'm Irish.
Cyril gave her a smug grin. Some people might call it Irish blarney, but I call it Irish charm.
You're wonderful, Cyril. Thank you so much for your Irish charm. Between you and Ross, Michelle has a great gift.
Maybe I shouldn't ask you this, but what's happening with Ross, Hannah? Is he coming back? I know the word on the street is that he's out on location for a special project, but the fact he signed his car over to you makes me wonder.
Hannah took a deep breath, readying herself for the explanation her whole family had urged her to make. She opened her mouth to speak the rehearsed words, but she just couldn't do it.
Truthfully, I just don't know, she admitted. I can't explain why he signed his car over to me, and I can't ask him until he comes back.
Fair enough, Hannah. Maybe he was planning to get a new car, or maybe he had some sort of premonition that something was going to happen to him, and he wanted to provide for you just in case. People do have premonitions, you know. They call it the gift of second sight.
Anything's possible, Cyril, Hannah responded, even though she didn't want to think about it.
Keep the faith, darling, Cyril told her, patting her shoulder. It's better to believe that everything'll be all right than it is to worry that it won't.
Upside down pear coffee cake. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. Sweet crumb topping. 1/2 cup finely chopped pecans. 1/3 cup brown sugar. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 1/4 cup all-purpose flour. Pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 1/2 teaspoon cinnamon. 1.5 ounces cold salted butter. That's 3 tablespoons. Fruit layer. 1/4 cup salted butter, 2 ounces, 1/2 stick, 1/8 pound. 1/2 cup brown sugar, pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 3 pears, peeled, cored, and thinly sliced, either fresh or canned. 1/2 cup golden raisins. Coffee cake batter. 2 cups all-purpose flour, pack it down in the cup when you measure it. 1 cup white granulated sugar. 3 teaspoons baking powder. That's 1 tablespoon. 1 teaspoon salt, 1/3 cup softened salted butter, 1 cup whole milk, 1 large egg. Prepare your baking pans. You'll need a 9-inch by 9-inch square pan with 2-inch tall sides. Hannah's first note, if the only square pan you have is 8 inches square, use that, and also use a standard size bread pan. Baking times for alternate pans are different, so test for doneness by inserting a long toothpick or cake tester in the center of the pan. If it comes out clean, your cake is done. If not, give it a bit more baking time in the oven. Spray your pans with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray. While your pans are prepared, empty, and still cool, find a pretty heat-proof platter.
Make sure that the platter is larger than the surface of the pan. It will also help if the platter has slightly raised edges, because the butterscotch liquid that will be formed in the oven will drizzle down when you invert the pan over the platter. And you won't want to lose a drop of that wonderful butterscotch taste.
Prepare the sweet crumb topping first. Use a fork from your silverware drawer to mix the chopped pecans and the brown sugar together in a small mixing bowl. Next, mix in the all-purpose flour and the cinnamon. Use the fork or a pie crust blender to cut in the cold butter. Continue to mix until the resulting mixture is crumbly. Set the sweet crumb topping aside on the counter while you prepare the fruit layer. Place the butter in the bottom of your prepared baking pans. Set the pans in the oven until the butter has melted. Use pot holders to take the pans out of the oven and then move to a wire rack or a cold stove burner. Sprinkle the brown sugar on top of the melted butter in the pans. Arrange the thickly sliced pears in the pans. Sprinkle the golden raisins on top of the sliced pears. Let the pans sit on the rack or cold burners while you make the coffee cake batter. Hannah's second note. This coffee cake is easier to make if you use an electric mixer. You can do it by hand, but it will take some time and muscle. Combine the flour, white sugar, baking powder, and salt in the bowl of an electric mixer. Mix for a few seconds on low speed and turn off the mixer. Add the softened butter, milk, and egg. Mix them in on low speed for a minute, and then turn the mixer up to medium speed. Mix for 1 minute, then shut off the mixer and scrape down the bowl. Mix at medium speed for another 2 minutes. Shut off the mixer and scrape down the bowl again. Take the bowl out of the mixer and give it another stir by hand with a rubber spatula. Pour the coffee cake batter over the fruit layer in your pans. Remember that sweet crumb topping? It's now time to use it. Sprinkle the sweet crumb topping over the coffee cake batter in your pans. Bake your yummy creation at 350 degrees Fahrenheit until a cake tester, long toothpick, or thin wooden skewer inserted in the center of the cake comes out clean with no batter sticking to it. Baking time for the 9-inch by 9-inch square pan should be approximately 50 minutes. If you used an 8-inch by 8-inch square pan, baking time should be approximately 40 minutes. If you also used a standard-sized bread pan, baking time should be approximately 40 minutes. Hannah's third note, start testing your upside-down pear coffee cake 5 minutes before the end of the baking time. Use pot holders to remove the pans from the oven, then immediately invert a heat-proof serving platter over the top of your pan. Hold on to the pans with pot holders and invert the pan quickly. Leave the pans in place, sitting on top of your upside-down pear coffee cake, for 1 or 2 minutes, so that the butterscotch formed by the butter and brown sugar can drizzle down over the top of your coffee cakes. Yield approximately 9 servings, unless you invite Mike or Norman. Michelle's note. The next time I make this, I'm going to try it with thinly sliced fresh peaches.
Chapter 13. Promptly at 9 o'clock, Hannah stood at the top of the steps of the Lake Eden First Mercantile Bank, waiting for Lydia Graydon, the head teller, to open the front door.
"Good morning, Hannah," Lydia said in her best customer service voice as she unlocked the door and ushered Hannah in.
"Hi, Lydia," Hannah responded, stepping inside the cavernous interior. The bank was built entirely of Minnesota granite, trucked here from the Cold Spring granite quarries.
"I'll help you in just a minute," Lydia told her. "Just let me open the safe and unlock my cash box."
"Take your time, Lydia," Hannah said, watching her walk away. Lydia was wearing a tight red pullover sweater that she must have purchased when she was 2 or 3 sizes smaller, and an extremely short black skirt that Dolores would have termed inappropriate for a woman approaching 60. The only bank in town was nicely decorated with fake palm trees
of a species that would never grow in the Minnesota climate. Comfortable chairs upholstered in a beautiful shade of lavender graced the waiting area, and Hannah chose one to occupy. There were small glass-topped tables between the chairs, and large, colorful paintings of tropical flowers that would quickly wither and die if they had been planted in a local garden. The decor had been updated when Doug Grierson had taken over as president of the bank, and Hannah had once asked him why he'd chosen to decorate in fake trees and flowers that would be more at home on a tropical island. Doug had laughed and confessed that since he never had time for vacations, entering the newly decorated bank every morning gave him the illusion of tropical warmth and was second best only to taking a trip to Aruba. "I'm ready for you," Lydia motioned to Hannah as she took her seat on the high swivel chair behind the first teller's window. Hannah got up and hurried to Lydia's window. "I have a deposit for my personal checking account." Lydia examined the check Hannah pushed through the grate that separated the tellers from the customers. Then she flipped it over and frowned slightly. "You have to endorse it, Hannah." "Of course I do." Hannah felt like a fool as Lydia pushed the check back through the grate. "Sorry about that," she apologized as she quickly endorsed the check. "I know my account got really low, and this check should help a lot."
"Let's put it in, and I'll give you your new balance," Lydia said, clicking some keys on her computer keyboard.
A moment later, she began to frown. "What is it, Lydia? I haven't reconciled my latest bank statement yet, but I'm not overdrawn, am I?"
"I should say not." Lydia looked shocked at Hannah's question. "I'll write the current balance on your receipt of deposit."
It took a moment for the printer to generate the receipt, and then Lydia flipped it over and wrote on the back of the slip. She pushed it through the grate to Hannah and watched as Hannah read the amount.
"But this says..."
Hannah took a deep breath before she read off the amount.
$60,876. "That's what my screen says. Did you make a big deposit to your personal account that should have gone into your business account?"
"No. I've never had that much in my business account. This is wrong, Lydia. Somehow my personal account was credited with someone else's deposit."
"Just let me see whose initials are on that large deposit."
Lydia typed something on her keyboard and waited for a response.
"Oh, dear,"
she said, wincing slightly. "Who is it?" Lydia leaned closer to the grate.
"It's Doug Grierson. Let me go see if he's in his office, Hannah. I'm not sure how this happened, but somehow a terrible mistake has been made."
2 minutes later, Hannah was seated in front of Doug's desk, a cup of cappuccino from his espresso machine in her hand. She sipped as Doug typed something on his keyboard, and then he looked up at her.
"It's not a mistake, Hannah. That is your correct balance. Did you think you had more than that in your account?"
"Good heavens, no. I've never deposited that much money in my life. And now I have $60,000 more than I'm supposed to have. I was credited with someone else's deposit, Doug, and by now their checks are probably bouncing all over the place."
Doug smiled.
"It's not someone else's deposit, Hannah. It's yours. And I think I see the problem. Didn't Ross tell you that he was transferring money to your account before he left to go out on location?"
Hannah was so shocked that for a moment she couldn't speak.
"No," she answered in a small voice. I was at work and we didn't get a chance to talk before he left."
Doug pulled out his desk drawer and removed a folder.
"Well, he certainly took care to make sure that you wouldn't need any money while he was gone. I have some signature cards for you to sign."
"Signature cards?"
"Yes, for his accounts. He listed you on all his accounts, and he said he wanted to make them joint accounts. He told me he felt bad that he hadn't done that before you two were married."
Hannah watched as Doug pulled some cards from his folder.
"There are three accounts,"
And here are 3 signature cards. Just sign your full name on the second line of each card, and you'll be able to access any and all of them.
Doug stopped speaking and stared at her across his desk.
You look pale, Hannah. Are you all right?
Yes, it's just a surprise, that's all.
Hannah looked down at the signature cards so that Doug couldn't see how rattled she was. It appeared that Ross had left all of his assets to her, including his car. Was Cyril right, and had Ross gotten a premonition that something bad was going to happen to him, and he might not be able to come home? Or was this even more proof that he had planned to leave and never come back home to her? But Ross had taken his keys to the condo with him. Didn't that prove that he'd planned to come back? As Hannah signed the first card, she tried her best to trust Cyril's advice about believing that everything would be all right instead of worrying about the worst. But faced with this new information about the man she had married, it was even more difficult not to worry.
"While you're signing, I'll print out the balances," Doug said, turning to his keyboard again. "Ross told me he wanted you to know exactly what was in each of his accounts."
Hannah nodded. She was still too upset to try to speak. As she signed the second card, Doug's printer activated, and a sheet of paper dropped into the tray. Doug removed the paper and reached across his desk to hand it to her.
"Here you are, Hannah."
"Thank you, Doug."
Hannah signed the last card, stacked them in a neat pile, and pushed them across the desk to Doug. Then she folded the sheet of paper in half and stuck it in her purse. There was no way she could face any more surprises this morning. She'd look at it later, when she was alone in the kitchen at the cookie jar. Hannah slipped the last pan of cookies onto a shelf in her industrial oven and closed the door. After she'd set the timer, she walked to the kitchen coffee pot and poured herself a cup. A moment later, she was sitting on her usual stool at the workstation. Her saddlebag purse seemed to loom large on the stool next to her. It drew her like a magnet, and her curious mind demanded satisfaction.
"Go ahead and look," it urged her. "You're alone, and you've put it off long enough. Everyone else is in the coffee shop, and no one will notice if it upsets you. You want to know, don't you?"
She did want to know, and Hannah reached over to open her purse. She drew out the folded sheet of paper that Doug had given her and held it in her hand. Ross had spent the weeks preceding their marriage telling her not to worry, that they could afford it whenever he spent large sums of money. But was it true? Or would there be some huge credit card bills coming in the mail for her husband? Hannah sent up a silent prayer that Ross had enough money to pay any bills that would arrive, and then she unfolded the paper. She was afraid to look at the paper. She eyed the swinging restaurant-style door instead, half hoping that someone would push through and she would have to stuff it back in her purse, but it was perfectly motionless.
"Coward," Hannah's mind chided her. "You'll have to look sooner or later. Do it right now, while you have some privacy. Take a deep breath and just do it."
She took a deep breath and looked down at the printout. The balance of the first account was a little over $30,000, and it showed an interbank transfer of $60,000. The transfer must be for the money that Ross had deposited in her personal checking account. The second account was next, and Hannah noticed that it was a money market account. The balance on that account was close to $100,000. Hannah was so shocked she dropped the paper. She knew that KCOW paid Ross a good salary, but that couldn't account for this much money. No wonder he told her not to worry, that they could afford to pay for their honeymoon cruise. She blinked to make sure her eyes wouldn't add any extra zeros to the balance of the third account. This one was an interest-bearing savings account, and it contained $226,000. Ross had over $400,000 in the Lake Eden First Mercantile Bank.
Hannah stared down at the paper in awe. Maybe Ross wasn't in the same category as Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, but he had more money in the bank than she could ever hope to accrue in her lifetime. She raised her coffee cup and took a sip. Then she looked down at the paper again. The totals were still the same. She hadn't imagined it. She pinched herself just to make sure that this wasn't a very real dream, and looked again. Still the same. It was really true. Hannah propped her head up with her hands. She felt slightly lightheaded and just a bit dizzy with everything that had happened. Things were moving too fast, moving away from her and out of her control. She reminded herself to breathe deeply, and when she felt more in control, she examined the paper again. The totals were there, clearly printed in black ink. The timer rang, and Hannah found she was grateful for the interruption. She needed to think about something besides wondering how Ross had accumulated all that money. She grabbed her oven mitts, moved the baker's rack closer to the oven, and took the trays from the shelves one by one. The maple crunch cookies would have to cool on the pans for a minute or two to crisp up before she placed the cookies on the baker's rack. Several minutes later, the cookies and their parchment paper lining were on the racks. They smelled wonderful, and Hannah was glad she'd thought to make them. Now all that remained was to taste test them. If they were good, she would bake more to take to the convention hall to sell as breakfast cookies. Hannah was about to sit down at the workstation again when there was a knock on the back door. It was a knock she recognized, and she hurried to let Norman in. "Hi, Hannah," he greeted her as he hung his parka on a hook by the back kitchen door. "Do I smell fresh cookies? Or are they pancakes?" Hannah laughed. "They're not pancakes, but they do smell like that. They're maple crunch cookies. Sit down, Norman. I'll get you a cup of coffee, and then I'll see if the cookies are cool enough to put on a plate." While Norman sipped his coffee, Hannah walked over to the baker's rack to test the cookies. Since they were still warm but not hot, she filled a plate and carried it back to the workstation. "Try one, Norman," she urged as she set the plate down in front of him. "I've never baked these before, and I want to know what you think of them." Norman reached for a cookie and took a bite. Then he began to smile. "They're good," he told her. "I'd like to eat these for breakfast at least twice a week, maybe more. They're crunchy and sweet, and they taste like maple syrup. They're even better than pancakes. There's something else, too. It's something I like, but I can't quite figure out what it is." "Corn flakes."
"That's it,"
Norman nodded and reached for another cookie. "So it's cereal and pancakes, two of my favorites for breakfast. Are you going to try them out on your customers today?"
"Yes. They love it when we try out new cookies."
"Because they enjoy giving you their opinion?"
"That's part of it. The other part is taste-testing cookies for us means that they're free."
"That's always a bonus." Norman took another cookie and pushed the plate toward Hannah. "Put those away, please. They're addictive, and I'll eat them all if you leave them here." Hannah was smiling as she removed the plate and placed it on the kitchen counter, but her smile faded as she approached the workstation again.
"I need to show you something, Norman. I need your advice."
"Okay. What is it?"
"Cyril gave me a check for $500 this morning. He said his profit from selling Ross's car was more than the cost of Michelle's car."
"That's great, Hannah."
"Yes, but what happened after that wasn't so great. Or maybe it was. I need you to tell me."
"Okay. What happened?"
"I stopped by the bank to deposit Cyril's check to my personal account, and I discovered that there could be a big problem."
"It's okay, Hannah. If you need money, I'll be glad to lend it to you."
"It's not that, Norman.
As a matter of fact, it's exactly the opposite." "Exactly the opposite?"
Norman looked puzzled.
"What do you mean?" "You'd better start from the beginning, Hannah."
Maple Crunch Cookies. Do not preheat oven. Dough must chill before baking. 2 cups white granulated sugar, 2 cups salted butter, 2 sticks, 8 ounces, 1/2 pound,
softened to room temperature. 2 large eggs, beaten. Just whip them up in a glass with a fork. 1/2 cup maple syrup. 1 teaspoon baking soda. 1 teaspoon baking powder. 1 teaspoon salt. 1 teaspoon vanilla extract. 4 cups all-purpose flour. Pack the flour down in the cup when you measure it. 1/2 cup crushed corn flakes. Measure after crushing. I used Kellogg's corn flakes. 1 cup, 6-ounce package, white chocolate or vanilla chips. 1/2 cup white granulated sugar for later to coat the cookie dough balls you will make before baking your cookies. Hannah's first note, to measure maple syrup, spray the inside of the measuring cup with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray. If you do this, the syrup will not stick to the inside of the measuring cup. Hannah's second note, you can make these cookies by hand in a large mixing bowl with a wooden spoon, but using an electric mixer is a lot easier. Place the white sugar and the softened salted butter in the bowl of an electric mixer. Beat them together until they are smooth and creamy. Add the beaten eggs and mix them in thoroughly. Add the maple syrup and mix it in until it is well combined. With the mixer running on low speed, beat in the baking soda, baking powder, salt, and vanilla extract. Mix until everything is well combined. Measure out the flour and add it to the bowl in 1/2 cup increments, mixing thoroughly after each addition. Use a rubber spatula to scrape down the sides of the mixing bowl and remove it from the mixer. Add the crushed corn flakes and white chocolate chips to your mixing bowl and stir them in by hand. Continue stirring until they are evenly distributed. Give your maple crunch cookie dough a final stir by hand with a wooden spoon. Chill the dough for at least 1 hour before baking. Overnight is fine, too. When your dough has chilled, preheat your oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. While your oven is preheating, prepare your baking sheets by spraying them with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray, or lining them with parchment paper. Measure out the 1/2 cup of white sugar and place it in a shallow bowl. You'll use this to coat your dough balls. Roll the dough into walnut-sized balls with your hands. Roll the dough balls in the bowl of sugar, and then place them on the prepared cookie sheets, 12 to a standard sheet. Flatten the dough balls just a bit with a metal spatula. This will keep them from rolling off the cookie sheet as you carry it to the oven. Bake your maple crunch cookies at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 to 12 minutes, or until they are golden brown. Take the cookies out of the oven, cool them on the cookie sheets for no more than 2 minutes, then remove the cookies and place them on a rack to complete cooling. If you leave them on the cookie sheets for too long, they'll stick. Michelle's note. Andrea says that Tracy and Bethy are trying to convince her to bring them down to the cookie jar so that they can eat these cookies instead of the bowls of cereal that Andrea usually gives them for breakfast. Chapter 14. Here's what happened, Hannah said, sitting down on the stool across from Norman. I put my personal checkbook in my purse because I didn't want Michelle to have to pay any extra money for whatever car she chose. I knew my balance, and I was hoping that I had enough in my account to cover the difference. That was nice of you, Hannah. Thanks. I wanted to do it for her, Norman. She never lets me pay her for helping out at the cookie jar, and I owe her a lot. I didn't have that much in my account, but I was hoping it would be enough. And if it wasn't, I was going to put the rest on time with Cyril and pay it off. I would have given you the money if it had been more, Hannah. All you had to do was let me know. Thank you, Norman. Hannah thought again about how sweet and caring Norman was, and then she went on with her explanation. As it turned out, I certainly didn't need any more money.
Because of the check from Cyril?
That's just a small part of it. When I took Cyril's check to the bank and deposited it, I said something to Lydia about how I hoped I wasn't overdrawn. She checked my balance, and she looked really shocked when she wrote the total on the deposit slip. It was $60,000 more than I thought I had.
The bank made a mistake?
That's what I thought, And Lydia did, too. She looked at the teller's initials and said that Doug Grierson had handled that deposit.
Doug?
Yes. And I went straight into his office to talk to him about it. It turned out it wasn't a mistake at all. That Ross had come in to see Doug right before he left town, and he deposited $60,000 in my personal account. Norman gave a low whistle. Don't whistle yet. That's not all. Doug said Ross had added my name to all of his accounts, and he had the signature cards for me to sign so that I would have full access. Ross has a lot of money in the bank, Norman. It's much more than I ever would have guessed.
Hannah had just given Norman that shocking news when there was a knock at the back kitchen door. It was rhythmic, three short knocks and then a louder one, almost like a snare drum cadence.
Andrea, Hannah informed Norman. If you go let her in, I'll pour a cup of coffee for her.
You'd better put this back in your purse for safekeeping, Norman said, handing her the paper with the bank balances.
Good idea. Hannah took the paper and slipped it into her purse. Then she walked to the coffee pot to pour coffee for Andrea.
By the time Hannah was back with a fresh mug of coffee, Andrea had seated herself on the stool next to Norman.
Sorry, Hannah, she said, looking very apologetic. I've been out talking to people and I couldn't find anyone who...
She stopped speaking and glanced at Norman. Then she gave Hannah a distressed look.
Sorry, Hannah, I'll tell you later.
I don't have any secrets from Norman, Hannah reassured her. Tell me now.
Okay, Andrea turned to Norman. Hannah asked me to talk to people to find out if anyone seemed to have a grudge against Ross or disliked him for any reason. She said she didn't know if that drugged candy was meant for PK or for Ross. And she didn't think anyone would tell her anything negative about Ross.
I understand, Norman told her.
But there was nothing, Andrea said. I talked to everyone I could think of, even Irma York, and you know what a big gossip she is. Even Irma couldn't think of anything bad about Ross, and neither could anyone else. Everyone really likes him. He's very popular in Lake Eden.
How about work? Norman asked. Is there anyone at KCOW television who might feel it wasn't there when Ross was hired and thought that they should have gotten his job instead?
I have to check that out later. I didn't get time to go there today. She stopped and glanced at her watch. I can't go now. I have an appointment. Is it all right if I do that tomorrow, Hannah?
You've done enough, Andrea, and believe me, I appreciate it. I'll run out to KCOW later and see if anyone there knows anything.
I did find out one other thing, but it's not about Ross, Andrea told her. Grandma Knutson told me that PK's funeral is going to be held tomorrow.
Norman looked over at Hannah. Are you planning to go?
Hannah made an instant decision.
Yes, I want to go.
I'll go with you, Andrea told Hannah. Detectives always learn something at a murder victim's funeral. That's true in almost every detective show.
You watch detective shows? Hannah asked, knowing that Andrea preferred shows that involved fashion or interior decorating.
Bill watches them, and since I like to spend time with him when he actually gets home at a reasonable time, I watch them too. I'm definitely going to the funeral, Hannah. All those detective shows can't be wrong, and you never know who might talk to one of us and tell us something we need to know.
Once Andrea had left with a bag of Maple Crunch cookies for Tracy and her friends, Norman turned to Hannah. I'd better go. If I stay here, you'll never get any work done.
Oh, yes, I will, Hannah said with a laugh. All I have to do is bake some bar cookies, and we can talk while I mix them up.
Okay, Norman agreed, sitting back down again. What are you making, Hannah?
Sweet and salty strawberry bar cookies. I love the combination of sweet and salty.
So do I. I can remember my mother sprinkling sea salt on chocolate sundaes. She said it brought out the richness of the chocolate.
And she was right.
Hannah made a quick trip to the pantry and came out carrying the ingredients she needed. She softened some butter, mixed it in with the white sugar she'd already placed in the bowl of the industrial stand mixer, and gave a little sigh.
"What do you think it means, Norman?"
"I can only guess, but it's clear Ross was worried he'd be gone for a while, and he wanted to leave you with enough money."